Hey, Summit.
Hi.
Hi, you are like a big stuffed animal. A really big stuffed animal. Like a bear. Yeah, and you slobber a lot.
On the judging floor, I met a big Newfoundland named Summit and his owner, 18-year-old Emma Taylor.
All right, well, good luck, Summit.
I asked her about something that kept coming up at the dog show, which is the controversy around breeding dogs to such specific standards.
Are there any breeds that there's sort of things that encouraged in the breed that end up being not very good for the breed?
Yeah, like size, particularly for Newfoundlands. If there's an overly big dog, then there's more cases of torn ACLs. So it's important to focus on the big picture and not just one thing that's in style now.
But some people do.
Oh, yeah, a lot of people do. It's bad.
Breeding to such extremes, puppy mills, these are some of the negative things about dog shows and dog breeding that make the headlines. And those are very real problems that remind us this is an industry. But Emma Taylor says being part of the dog show world is good for her and her dog.
We love our dogs so much. We wouldn't do this if it wasn't fun.
And the other breeders and owners that we met at the dog show, all of them said that they think of their dogs as part of their family.
Once that animal is part of your family, that's exactly what it means. It is part of your family.
We know they're not people. They're not the same as our children, but they are part of our family, and we've assumed responsibility for them the day we said, okay, you can come live here.
All the breeders that you meet up here, their dogs, if they're not members of their family, that's what they should be telling you first. Then there's something wrong. Then you're talking to a puppy mill, you know?
Kids used to say that to you. You love the dogs more than you love us. No, I loved them all, and the dogs, though, in a sense, are our children, too.
I spoke to Amy Cook about this very thing. She's a researcher in dog cognition in the psychology department of UC Berkeley, and she's also been a dog trainer for 20 years. I was specifically interested to learn more about the dog-human relationship and how that compares to the human-human relationship.
There's a draw in us to have animals with us, to have animals that we can relate to, and I think that's probably the genesis of some of that draw. But then you have your close reasons of like, I don't have kids, I want something to nurture, or, you know, I always had a dog as a kid and I just love how loyal they are. We make these big romantic stories around what dogs do for us and what they're like. And I think those stories say more about what we want and what we're sort of like than they do about the actual relationship we have with dogs. We want them to be so much more romantic than they actually turn out to be. But I think the story, in a more academic way, is more about this co-story that we've had of dependency, where we've needed them, we've used them to get where we are today, to be the humans that we are today. They helped us out in the encampments we first settled. I mean, they were useful to us. And
but that's not the case now. I mean, so if we could sort of think of this, you know, I'm not a hunter anymore, or they're not at the campfire.
Right.
So what is going on from a psychological point of view? In this relationship?
Yeah. You know, I see it positively and negatively. I think sometimes they do great things for us or psychologically. I mean, there's plenty of research about how the health benefits that having a dog, you know, confers.
And, like what?
We're more tactile with animals than we are. Certainly American society, I know this is not a universal, a worldwide thing. We all have very different touch rates country to country. But Americans don't touch each other very much. We're one of the lowest, we have the lowest touch rate. I think we're near with the Brits, I think, down to like zero or one per interaction, you know, per
right.
entire coffee time. Whereas, you know, if you're somewhere else, it's up in the hundreds. You know, I'm forgetting which countries, but that's very necessary for humans. Need to do that. Humans need to touch. It's our culture that's made us not do it much. But the oxytocin benefits you get, both yourself and that the dog also gets, are great. They're impactful to us. Also, I know about there's research sort of on social support. If I don't have friends to turn to, I actually can turn to a dog. And I may not be able to arrange whether I have a friend. Everybody's life is a little different. You can't just decide, hey, Chris, I want to be your friend. Let's hang out for sure. But I can adopt a dog or I can get a cat.
I mean, so this idea, right, like if you were to move cities and you go somewhere and you have no sort of social network yet, but don't, I mean, let's just face it, it's more difficult to foster relationships between human beings. And so, like, to what degree do you find that people will use the dog as a substitute?
I think we do. I think that's a fair thing to say. And I'm on the fence about what I think, if that's a good or a bad thing. I think it's, of course, the story is more complicated and it's probably a good and a bad thing. I think people use them as substitute children plenty of times, something to nurture. I think people use them as substitute friends and substitute partners. You get to an age, you're divorced, and how many, you know, I know plenty of people who have a lot of animals kind of in place of that. And I suppose if you ask them, it wouldn't necessarily be the answer you'd get, that it's like, oh, no, I decided to turn away from people and I'm just going to invest in my pets. I don't think it's how we see it or want to see it. It's not flattering. But, you know, we are inherently social and we need these kinds of bonds with other beings of some sort. We need this to survive and to be mentally healthy.
I see. I mean, what do you, you know, people often use this term, you know, that a dog or a pet will give you unconditional love. What do you make of it? I mean, clearly that doesn't, in the human world, that's almost, I would say almost impossible. Well, that's a different topic, but...
Right, right.
what do you make of this idea of a dog providing unconditional love?
Yeah, again, my feeling is that that's a bit of a construct, right, that we just want to be true. I think what we're seeing, though, that we're wanting to label unconditional is this just abject joy. You've come home, and they're so glad that you did. And they're so excited to see you, and it's so awesome to be with you, even if we're doing nothing. And I don't know that I have a single other person in my life that just feels that way every single time I come home or want to do something fun or whatever. That isn't there. So that feels a little like that unconditional thing. Like, I've had a bad day, but you're not mad at me. You just want to hang out. And I think it's simplistic, but in that good way where people can be complicated and that can bring about, you know, hardship or just, you know, compromise a lot. And animals in their simplicity, even if it allows you to project things that aren't true, maybe aren't true, still serves that sort of, I always know my dog will love me no matter what. You know, I had a bad day, but I've got my dog.
And that's a good thing, you think?
I think it's, like many things, it's a good thing if we don't take it too far. Because the more romantic you get about what you think your dog is thinking, the more you're liable to have it really affect your decisions on how you treat them or what you give them. And that can absolutely turn to become something that does not benefit the dog. If you really think this romantic idea about your dog is true, then you'll treat them in a way that doesn't respect their animal nature. And that's not good for them. It might be good for you. I don't know. But it's very often not good for dogs to be not seen as exactly who they are.